I drove down Hamilton to the bonds office lot. Mooner's bus and Connie's car were parked curbside. No Vinny. No Lula. I parked behind Connie and let myself into the bus. The walls and the ceiling were upholstered in cream microfiber. The floor was tan Berber carpet. Countertops were pale green faux marble formica. No more Death Star. Mooner was watching television with his sunglasses on. Connie was working at her computer. "This is great," I said, sitting in a club chair. "Uncle Jimmy did a good job."
"What is butter?" Mooner yelled at the television.
Connie looked at me.
"The bus is better, but it isn't perfect. It's still got Moona."
"That's because he owns it," I told her. "Where is everyone?"
"Vinny is downtown bonding someone out, and Lula is at the dentist."
"Did she say what was wrong?"
"No, she left a message on my cell. I have a vision of her getting her fangs ground down."
That dragged a grimace out of both of us.
"What did you do over the weekend?" Connie asked. "Anything interesting?"
"I took Grandma to Lou Dugan's viewing Saturday night, and Nick Alpha was there."
"I'm not surprised. They were business partners before Nick got sent to prison. Dugan was part owner of the gym on Stark Street where Benito Ramirez trained."
I told her about the conversation at the viewing. Connie's eyes got wide.
"He said he was gonna kill you?"
"Yeah, and he said he'd killed before."
"Did you tell Morelli?"
"He's gonna talk to Nick, but I'm not sure how effective that'll be."
"Do you think Nick was serious about killing you?"
I nodded my head.
"Yeah, I think he was serious.
He had a lot of time in prison to work himself up over Jimmy's death. Morelli will do what he can as a cop, but I need to go proactive." It occurred to me that Nick could have killed Dugan, Lucarelli, Beck, and Kulicki. If I can prove it, I can have him sent away forever, and I won't have to worry about him killing me.
"He knew Dugan, Lucarelli, and Kulicki," Connie said. "He could have had something against them. Timing is right. Alpha got out of prison just before the killing started."
"I broke into his apartment last night, but I couldn't find any evidence."
"That doesn't mean Alpha didn't kill those people."
I helped myself to coffee and returned to my chair. "True, but Ranger doesn't think Alpha feels right. He thinks Alpha is a shooter, and all the victims were strangled with their necks broken. So if Ranger's right, I have to get something else on Nick Alpha. I'm sure he's dirty. I just have to find out what he's into right now."
"I'm sure I can get answers for you," Connie said. "The difficulty will be proving it."
"If I can tell the police exactly where to look, they can set something up. After I get things in motion, I can lock myself in my apartment and not go out until Alpha's put away."
"What about Ranger? I'm sure he'd take care of Alpha for you."
"Ranger is working off enough bad karma. I don't want to add to the burden." Connie put her headset on.
"Let me make some phone calls."
Chapter 35. I went to the back of the bus and watched Jeopardy reruns with Mooner for an hour while Connie researched crime.
"I could, like, do this," Mooner said. "I could rule Jeopardy."
He sat forward.
"What is Sri Lanka? Ancient Greek history for 200.
I abandoned Jeopardy and looked in on Connie.
"I have a couple leads," Connie said. "Alpha was sent away for running numbers and extortion. Apparently he's back in the extortion business, and there are some Stark Street businessmen who aren't happy about it."
"And they're talking?"
"Not to police, but in the community."
"Can I convince them to talk to the police?"
"Not until you get Alpha taken off the street for something else. There's a lot of fear. He came out of prison crazy angry."
"Is there something else?"
"Cockfighting."
"Get out."
"Word is he's running cockfights somewhere Monday and Thursday nights, and cockfights are a felony. My source didn't know where the fights were taking place, but I ran property tax records, and Nick Alpha owns 5 Stark Street properties."
Connie handed me a note card with the addresses.
"1 is under his name, and 4 as NAA LLC.
The door to the bus opened, and Vinny climbed the stairs and handed Connie a file.
"Business is booming! I'm bonding out guys who are telling me they're going FTA so the Hooters girls will come get them."
He pointed his finger at me.
"You're gonna either need a boob job or a really serious push-up bra."
I looked down at myself. I liked my boobs just the way they were. They weren't too big and they weren't too small. They were a perfect handful for Morelli.
You're an idiot, I said to Vinny.
Yeah,
Vinny said, but I'm your idiot boss. What are you doing here? Don't you have anything better to do? Why aren't you out chasing bad guys?
I caught all the bad guys.
What about the flyers?
We hung them all.
I'll give you $5 if you wash my car, Vinny said.
I was tempted to take it. I could use the money.
What is Queen Elizabeth?
Mooner yelled at the television.
Christ, Vinny said. Is he watching Jeopardy again? Lock him in the can with Donkey Kong. I got work to do.
Do you know anything about cockfights? I asked Vinny.
Like, what do you want to know?
I want to know if there are any around.
Is the Pope Catholic?
Do you know where they're held?
No, they're not my thing. I like the ponies. I imagine the cockfights move around. They're illegal. What's your interest? Not a lot of women into cockfighting. As your cousin, I would advise you not to go alone. Even if you're armed, you don't want to go alone. I hear it's a rough crowd.
There was a rap on the door, and Morelli stuck his head in.
Good morning, he said. I need to talk to Stephanie.
I stepped out, and we walked away from the bus.
It looks like we found the last poker player,
Morelli said. Sam Grip?
Probably. The body wasn't in good shape. It was stuffed into the trunk of his car, and a ballpark guess is he was killed in the same time frame as Lou Dugan and Bobby Lucarelli. The car was found early this morning. It was parked in a scrubby section of woods in the Pine Barrens, and it attracted attention because there were about 40 buzzards sitting on it and another 100 circling overhead. Apparently, they'd been circling for days, and someone finally investigated.
Ick. Was Sam addressed to me?
Nope. No note. They're sending a helicopter out to do a flyover. I'm guessing they'll find the rest of the cars in the same area.
Why did the killer hide the cars? Why didn't he just leave them with the bodies? Morelli shrugged.
Don't know.
Sounds like standard operating procedure for the mob. They bury people in the Pine Barrens all the time. I bet Nick Alpha's prints are all over the car.
I don't know if you can categorize Nick Alpha as mob,
Morelli said.
Most of the Trenton mob guys are in their 90s.
Work with me here, I said. I need to pin something on Alpha. Morelli dragged me up against him and kissed me.
Try to stay out of trouble,
he said.
I have to go.
I watched him walk to his car, and I thought I felt a small stirring of feeling down in the dead zone. Maybe it wasn't dead after all. Maybe it had just been resting. I opened the door to the bus and called to Connie.
I'm taking off, I said. I want to check out the addresses. Take someone with you, she said. Two of those addresses were on Upper Stock.
I don't have anyone. I'll be fine.
Take Muna, please.
I looked in at her. You just want to get rid of him.
I can't take it anymore. If he yells one more answer, I'm going to rip his lungs out.
I gave up a sigh. I'll take him with me.
This is like a new role for me,
Mooner said, buckling himself into the Shelby.
Who would think we'd be partners? It's like fucking awesome. I'm like psyched.
We're just going to ride down Stark and look at some real estate. I gave him the card with the addresses. When we get to Stark, you can read the numbers off to me.
I could read them better if I had a burger.
I hit the drive-thru at Cluckin' a Bucket, and we got chicken burgers and fries.
This is an excellent job,
Mooner said, eating his last fry.
This is almost as good as distributing pharmaceuticals.
The only property in Alpha's name was a dry cleaner, and I didn't think that had good cockfighting potential. The second address was a slum rooming house, a three-floor walk-up on the edge of no man's land. The last two were warehouses at the blighted end of Stark. One was designated as Gimple's Moving and Storage, and the other looked unused. They were on the same block, but opposite sides of the street. I turned at the corner and took the service alley behind Gimple's. There were two roll-up garage doors, one loading dock, and a back door. I didn't know much about cockfighting, but I thought this looked like a possibility. I idled behind Gimple's and called Connie. Is Gimple's Moving and Storage real? I asked her.
It's a legitimate business with a phone number, but it's probably frontin' for something, and I don't know what that is.
I drove to the other side of Stark and cruised past the warehouse that looked empty. Broken windows on the second floor in the rear. brick exterior covered with graffiti, 4 rusted, dented roll-up garage doors, 1 keyed exterior door. "What do you think?" I asked Mooner.
"About what?"
"Business opportunities in these 2 buildings."
"I like this one."
"Why?"
"I could, like, park my bus here, dude. There's room, no garbage cans or crapola."
He was right. The parking area was garbage-free. Not normal for Stark Street. Stark Street was like the city dump. Beer cans, whiskey bottles, food wrappers, broken televisions, fire-gutted mattresses, used and reused drug paraphernalia, all collected here in gutters, doorways, against sides of buildings, and in alleys. A patch of debris-free rutted blacktop meant someone was working to keep the area clear. "Try the back door," I said to Mooner. Mooner ambled over and opened the door.
"It's empty, man. Totally."
I motioned for him to get back into the car. I drove past the other warehouse one last time and left the neighborhood.
"That was bold," Mooner said. "What's our next adventure?"
I didn't have any more adventures, but I knew Connie would be disappointed if I brought him back too soon. "I think we should go to Holy Cow for ice cream," I said.
"Cool."
I picked Holy Cow because it was in Hamilton Township and it would use up almost an hour. I got a single dip of Jersey Mud, and Mooner couldn't make up his mind. He stood in front of the display case, eyes glazed, lips moving as he silently read the choices. Morelli called me, and I stepped outside to talk.
"They found 3 of the other cars," Morelli said. "They're going in on foot tomorrow to look for the 4th.
Were there more bodies? Did they find anything inside the cars?"
"I'm told the cars were empty."
"Did you know Nick Alpha is running cockfights?"
"I heard about the cockfights. I didn't know Alpha was involved."
There was a beat of silence.
"You aren't getting involved in this, are you?"
"No, of course not. Cockfighting is disgusting."
"Next time I fall in love, it's going to be with someone who isn't an expert at fibbing."
"You're in love with me?"
"You didn't know that?"
"I did, but it's nice to hear."
"Scares the hell out of me,"
Morelli said, and he hung up. I finished my ice cream and went inside. Mooner was still standing transfixed in front of the counter. "Give him a scoop of chocolate, a scoop of strawberry, a scoop of coffee, and a scoop of butter pecan," I said to the girl.
"Fucking A,"
Mooner said, smiling wide, and rocked back on his heels. Lula was in the bus when we got back.
"I had an abscess," she said. "That's why I thought my tooth was growing. The dentist says it's common to feel like that."
"So you're not turning into a vampire," Connie said.
"Well, I might be, but I don't have fangs, and I'm feeling much better now that I had the root canal. Of course, I'm packed full of drugs, so that could have something to do with it."
Lula looked around.
"This is nice. It don't have personality like before, but it don't feel like the sun died either."
"Anything for me?" I asked Connie.
"No, none of the new bondees have come up to trial yet. They'll start next week, and I imagine they won't all show up for court. Vinny bonded out some real losers. How did it go on Stark Street?"
"The 2 warehouses are possibilities." Lula snapped to attention.
"Stark Street? Warehouses? Did I miss something?"
I filled Lula in on the cockfighting and my plan to get Nick Alpha sent back to jail so he couldn't kill me.
"That's a good plan," Lula said. "He belongs in jail anyway, what with doing cruelty to animals. I don't have patience with people mistreating animals, and I like chickens."
"Especially when they're hacked up into pieces and fried," Connie said.
"Yeah, but that's a different kind of chicken," Lula said. "Those are nasty, bald, eating chickens. They're not the little red hen."
"Eating chickens aren't bald," I said.
"I seen them in the supermarket," Lula said, "and they're bald."
"Dude," Mooner said from the back of the bus, "something's wrong with my television. I can't get it to go on."
"Imagine that," Connie said. "Maybe the satellite is behind a cloud."
"What happens next?" Lula asked. "Are the cops gonna bust up the cockfight tonight?"
"I have to pin down the location before I make the call, and I want to make sure Alpha is there. I don't want to shut down the operation and not have Alpha involved." Lula nodded.
"I see what you're saying. So I'm thinking we're going out to a cockfight tonight. I gotta put some thought to this. I don't know if I got a cockfighting outfit at home. I might have to go shopping."
I'm not actually going to the cockfight. I'm going to hang around and follow Alpha when he goes out. Then, when I'm sure he's at the cockfight, I'll call Morelli.
I could live with that, Lula said. What time you want to meet up?
Are you sure you feel okay to do this?
Hell yeah, I'm almost 100%.
This wasn't something that filled me with confidence. When Lula and I operated at a full 100%, we weren't all that great. Almost 100% was getting into Three Stooges territory. You need a different car, Connie said. You'll be noticed in the Shelby. Lula's Firebird isn't any better.
I can get a car, Lula said. I'll borrow my cousin Ernie's car. He's got a piece of crap SUV. It'll blend right in on Stark Street.
I got into the Shelby, drove to my apartment building, and stopped at the entrance to the lot. I was afraid to park. Regina Bugle could be there. Even worse, Dave could be there. And if they weren't there now, they might be there when I wanted to leave, and I'd be trapped inside my apartment. I turned around and idled on a side street, running through my options. I could drop in on Morelli, but there would be complications. I didn't want to involve Morelli in this stage of the Nick Alpha saga, and he wouldn't want me to go to Stark Street. There would also be complications if I dropped in on Ranger, mostly related to Vordo, or the lack thereof. The Bonds bus felt claustrophobic. The new decor was much better, but it was still Mooner's bus. And I was afraid to go to the mall for fear of falling under the influence of another red dress. That left my parents' house. I got there early and sat in the kitchen watching my mother assemble dinner. I always offered to help, and my mother almost always declined. She'd been doing this for a lot of years, and she had her own rhythm. My grandmother was tuned into the rhythm and pitched in as needed.
I heard they found Sam Gripp, Grandma said.
There was no need for a newspaper or the internet in the burg. News traveled at the speed of light the old-fashioned way, over the back fence and in line at the deli. I got a soda out of the refrigerator. He was in his car in the Pine Barrens.
I hear Scooter Burkhauer is real worried. He played poker with those guys sometimes. The whole poker group is getting wiped out. Somebody don't like poker players. I wouldn't be surprised to find out it's someone's wife doing this. Probably one of those guys lost a lot of money and some wife wigged out.
That would be a decent theory, except for the two bodies addressed to me.
Or maybe it's Joyce Barnhart trying to get attention, Grandma said. I wouldn't put it past her. You know how she loves to be in the spotlight.
I drank some soda and recapped the bottle. Killing five people seems extreme, even for Joyce.
I suppose, Grandma said. This sure is a mystery.
That's a lot of potatoes you're mashing, I said to my mother. My mother added a big glob of butter to the potatoes.
We have a lot of people for dinner. Valerie and Albert are coming with the children.
My sister Valerie has two children by her disastrous first marriage and two with her second husband, Albert Clown. I love my sister and Albert, and I especially love the kids, but it's half a bottle of Advil when you get them all into my parents' small house.
We're going to need rubber walls if you ever get married and have kids, Grandma said to me. I don't know how we could fit any more people in here, and Dave looks like the kind who'd want a big family.
Dave isn't in the picture.
I hear different, Grandma said. It's all over town about you and Dave.
I traded my soda in for a glass of wine. If I had to deal with Valerie and the kids and talk about Dave, I was going to need alcohol. Chapter 36.
Geez, Lula said when I met her by the Bonds bus. You look worse than me, and I just had root canal.
I had dinner with my parents and Valerie and Albert and the kids. The dinner was fine, and it was nice to spend time with Valerie and the girls, but the conversation kept coming back to Dave Brewer and me.
And
I'm not interested in him. I don't want to date him. I don't want him cooking in my kitchen. Lula did a raised eyebrow.
You don't want him cooking in your kitchen?
Okay, maybe I want him cooking in my kitchen. The problem is, he won't stay in the kitchen. He wanders.
Huh,
Lula said. I put my hand up. Let me revise that statement. I don't even want him in my kitchen. Yes, he makes great food. Is it worth it? No. And I can't discourage him. He doesn't take hints. He doesn't listen. I broke his nose for crying out loud, and he came back to make breakfast.
How'd you break his nose?
I hit him in the face with a hairdryer.
Good one, Lula said.
We were on the sidewalk standing by an old junker SUV. It looked like it might be black under the grime, and there was some rust creeping up from the undercarriage. I don't think I've ever met your cousin Ernie, I said to Lula.
Ernie works for the roads department patching potholes. It's not a bad job, except he always smells like asphalt, and he got hit a couple times.
We saddled up in the SUV, and Lula drove to Stark Street. We cruised past the dry cleaner, turned at the corner, and rolled down the alley. Lula stopped just short of Alpha's building and killed the engine. Lights were on in the second floor windows, and there was a dark-colored Mercedes sedan parked next to the dry cleaning van. A little before 9 o'clock, Alpha's back door opened, lights were switched off in the apartment, and Alpha walked down the exterior stairs and got into the Mercedes.
We're in business, Lula said.
Lula crept along behind Alpha, lights off, until Alpha took the corner and turned onto Stark. She flipped her lights on and followed two cars back. Alpha drove the length of Stark, circled the block to the alley, and pulled into the parking lot to the empty warehouse. Lula cut her lights and idled at the corner. A garage door rolled up, and Alpha drove in. We waited a moment, and two more cars appeared and drove into the warehouse. They're using the warehouse like a parking garage, I said to Lula. Pretty clever. This way the cars don't attract attention and no one knows an event is going on.
Where are they going to have the cockfight if they park here? Is there an upstairs?
No, this building is all one level. It's just a high-ceiling warehouse, but Alpha owns the warehouse across the street. I'm betting these guys are all going across the street. Lula backed out of the alley and hung at the corner of Stark. Alpha and two men walked out of the front door to the parking garage, crossed the street, and disappeared inside the second warehouse.
Are we good or what? Lula said. We found the cockfight.
We found something. We don't actually know if it's a cockfight. Lula crossed Stark and took the side street, but wasn't able to go down the alley. The entrance to the alley was blocked off by a moving van. We drove around the block and found the other alley entrance was also blocked.
I hate this, Lula said. This drives me nuts. You know how Grandma Mazur's got to look inside the casket? That's how this is. I drove all the way up Stark Street and now I can't get down this stupid alley. They got a lot of nerve blocking the alley off so we can't go down. How are we supposed to know if there's a cockfight going on in there?
Lula pulled to the curb and parked.
I'm going down that alley. They can't keep me out. I got rights.
Wait, it's not safe. Crap. Lula was out of the car, huffing her way down the alley. I snatched the keys from the ignition and ran after her. The alley was dark. Streetlights got shot out in this part of town and never replaced. What was the point? Halfway down the block, a narrow band of light spilled out of the back of Alpha's warehouse. We shouldn't be doing this, I said to Lula. These people are scary.
How do you know?
It's Stark Street.
Yeah, but I want to see what's going on. It must be something good if they've got the alley blocked off.
They've got it blocked because they're doing something illegal. It's the cockfight, or they're unloading a hijacked truck, or they're murdering people.
I bet it's a cockfight, Lula said. I've never seen a cockfight. Not that I want to. It sounds disgusting, but it's like a train wreck. You gotta look, right? Maybe it's a vampire coming out in me.
The bar of light was coming from the open back door to the warehouse. A couple vans were parked in the small adjacent lot. The vans were unoccupied, and no one was lurking by the door. Everyone was inside the warehouse.
I bet if we looked in those vans, we'd find feathers, Lula said. This here's VIP parking, and that open door is practically an invitation for us to go in.
Male voices rumbled from the warehouse interior. Going in would be a bad idea, I said to Lula. There are men with guns and killer birds in there. Lula tiptoed up to the door.
We don't know that for sure. People could be blowing this cockfighting thing way out of proportion.
She peeked inside and sucked in air.
It's a little red hen, except I guess it's a rooster. And there's a big shiny black rooster and a bunch of cages I can't see into.
Great. That's exactly what I need to know. I'm calling this in. I stepped away from the warehouse, pressed myself against the side of a building where shadows were deep, and dialed police dispatch. I disconnected and realized Lula was nowhere to be seen. I heard a scream from inside the building.
It was followed by screeching and crowing and a lot of shouting, and Lula burst out the door. Two roosters half ran, half flew past me and disappeared into the night. A third bird was attached to Lula.
"Vampire rooster!" Lula yelled.
She was batting at the bird, and the bird was squawking and flapping his wings and pecking at Lula. She managed to knock the bird off her head, and the bird turned and attacked the men coming out the door. There was a lot of cussing and yelling and more squawking, and Lula and I took off at a dead run. We ran down the alley and hooked a left at the side street. We stopped and bent to catch our breath. I didn't hear footsteps. No one seemed to be running after us. There was a lot of angry shouting back by the warehouse, and someone flicked a flashlight beam across the alley. Lula straightened up and looked around.
"Didn't we park the car here?"
The Junker SUV was gone. This car-stealing stuff was getting old.
"It's a wonder anyone is ever able to get home in this neighborhood," Lula said. "You leave your car for 2 minutes, and the car ferry comes and takes it."
Lula's giant spider hairdo had been rearranged by the rooster and was now more rat's nest. She was wearing a black leather bustier, a denim skirt that barely covered her ass, and over-the-knee black leather boots with 4-inch spike heels. I imagine the outfit came from her S&M Ho collection. We were standing pretty much on the corner of Stark and Sydney. A red, tricked-out Grand Cherokee pulled up to us, the passenger window slid down, and a guy leaned out at us.
"Hey, bitch," he said. "What's up?"
"Go away," Lula said. "We're busy here."
"You don't look busy. You look like you're waiting to do me."
"My cousin Ernie isn't going to like this," Lula said to me. "How's he going to get to work tomorrow?"
The Cherokee doors opened, and two scrawny guys in two big clothes got out and strutted over to Lula.
"You look like a working bitch," the one guy said. "How come you don't want to work me?"
"I'm retired," Lula said. "Take a hike."
"I'll hike right up your fat lady ass," the guy said.
Lula turned on him, eyes narrowed.
"Did you call me fat? 'Cause you don't want to do that. You don't want to mess with me. I just lost Ernie's car, and I just had root canal, and my meds are wearing off, and I'm feeling mean as a snake. I'm a woman on edge right now, you punk-ass little pencil dick."
"I ain't no pencil dick. You want to see my dick?"
He unzipped his big, baggy pants, and Lula tagged both of them with her stun gun.
"Huh," Lula said.
She looked down at the two guys sprawled on the sidewalk, and then she looked over at their SUV.
"I think we just got a car."
"No way, that's Grand Theft Auto."
"You want to stay here and wait for a bus?"
"Good point." We scrambled into the Cherokee with Lula behind the wheel, and we took off. Two police cars passed us going in the opposite direction, lights flashing, no siren, most likely en route to the cockfight. "What happened in the warehouse?" I asked Lula.
"There wasn't anybody in the back room, so I went in to look at the chickens, and right off one of them was acting real friendly. He was looking at me with his head sort of tilted, and he was making clucking sounds like the little red hen would make. And I figured he wanted me to pet him, so I opened the door to his cage just a little to get my hand in, and next thing he busted out and attacked me. It was Ziggy all over again. And then when I was trying to get him off my head, I knocked into a stack of cages, and they fell over and broke apart, and the chickens all came rushing out. There was demon chickens all over the place, squawking and clawing at each other. It was a chicken nightmare. I won't be able to sleep tonight thinking about them chickens, and now they're running around loose, pecking the eyes out of people. Of course, it's Stark Street, so those chickens are going to have to duke it out with the drugged-up nutcases and hungry people looking for chicken parts."
We rode in silence after that, thinking our own thoughts about the Stark Street chickens. Lula drove through the center of the city, turned onto Hamilton, and parked behind my Shelby. "What are you going to do with this SUV?" I asked her.
"I'm going to give it to Ernie. Seems only fair he gets this car since someone stole his."
"But this is a stolen car. We stole it."
"And?"
There comes a point in conversation with Lula where it's best to drop back and punt. "Okay, then," I said. "I'll see you tomorrow. Hope your tooth feels better."
"Yep. Happy trails," Lula said.
I drove home on autopilot, talking to myself, my mind alternating between numb mush and episodes of panic. "I hate when people want to kill me," I said out loud to myself. "It makes my stomach feel weird, and I worry about Rex.
Who would take care of him if I got murdered? I don't even have a will. And do you know why I haven't got a will? It's because I don't have anything to leave anyone. How pathetic is that? I pulled into the lot to my apartment building and parked next to Mr. Molnar's blue Accord. I was halfway to the building's back door, worrying about a Dave Brewer appearance, when I heard someone behind me gun a car engine. Regina! I jumped to safety, and she roared past me, sideswiping a beater Dodge that belonged to Mrs. Gonzalez's loser son. One more dent in the Dodge wasn't going to get noticed. I sprinted to the building while Regina circled, and I made it inside before she reached me on the second pass. I took a deep breath and told myself things weren't as bad as they seemed. Regina would get tired of trying to run me over. Nick Alpha would get arrested. Dave would eventually move on. And one of these days, my reproductive system would get back to normal. I took the stairs and thought about Ranger naked. But I wasn't in a swoon by the time I reached the second floor, so clearly I had a way to go on the path to sexual recovery. At least Dave wasn't lurking in the hall when I peeked out from the stairwell. Chapter 37. My cell phone woke me from a restless sleep.
I'm at your door. I forgot my key,
Morelli said.
I've been knocking and ringing your doorbell. Where are you?
I'm here. Hang on. I dragged myself out of bed and let Morelli in. What time is it? I asked him.
It's 8 o'clock.
He set a bag and a container of coffee on my kitchen counter.
I brought you breakfast. I'm taking off for South Jersey. I want to see the crime scene before it gets dismantled. I'll probably be gone for most of the day. I was hoping you could walk Bob around noon.
Sure. He gave me something halfway between a smile and a grimace.
You look like you had a rough night.
I had a horrible night. I couldn't sleep. And when I did fall asleep, I had awful dreams.
Let me guess. The dreams were about chickens.
I don't want to talk about it. Did Alpha get arrested? Morelli opened my coffee for me.
No. By the time the police got to the warehouse, the evidence was scattered over a 10-mile radius.
I looked in the bag and pulled out a container of orange juice and a bagel with cream cheese. Thanks for bringing me breakfast. This was really nice of you.
Yeah, I'm a nice guy.
He hooked his finger into the neckline of my cotton-knit pajama top, looked inside at my breasts, and gave a small sigh.
So near, and yet so far, he said.
He kissed me and left. I dropped a chunk of bagel into Rex's cage, and I ate the rest. I drank the orange juice and took the coffee into my bedroom to drink while I dressed. A half hour later, I was at the Bonds bus. Where's Lula? I asked Connie.
She said she'd be in late. Something about her hair.
It looks like the cockfighting isn't going to get Alpha off the street. I'm going to have to find another angle.
I'm sure he's involved in a lot of bad stuff, but the only other thing I know for sure is the security racket.
Do you have store owners' names?
The first three blocks of Stark Street are controlled by Alpha. If a store is open and operating, they're paying for protection. If it's burned to the ground, they aren't.
That's pretty straightforward. Would I have any luck if I approached the people who had their store torched?
If you could find them, and they were alive and functioning beyond a vegetative state.
Jeez. Mooner was on the couch doing the jumble.
Uncle Black,
he said. I turned toward him. Who's Uncle Black?
He owns a comic book store on the second block of Stark, Uncle Black's Books. He had to raise his prices to cover his payments, but then, like, the payments got raised. It's a vicious cycle, dude. Uncle Black's an unhappy man.
I need to talk to Uncle Black, I said.
You gotta be comic book worthy or Uncle Black won't talk to you. He's focused. He's got, like, comic book laserness. He's like the comic book guru.
Wonderful. I'm the no-talent guru who's going to get him off the hook to Nick Alpha. Let's go. There wasn't a lot of traffic on Stark at this time of the morning, and I was able to park in front of Uncle Black's Books. I locked the Shelby, set the alarm, and followed Mooner into the store. Black's Books was a small, dusty space, crammed with tables holding thousands of collectible comics in boards and plastic bags. The comics were in alphabetical order according to category. Lots of Spider-Man, Superman, X-Men. Not so many Betty and Veronica and Casper. Lots of comics I'd never seen.
Whoa,
Mooner said, obviously gobstruck by a comic in a special display.
The creeper versus the human firefly. Awesome, dude. Fucking awesome.
Maybe we should buy that one, I said to him. Would that break the ice with Uncle Black? How much is it?
$45.
Are you kidding me? It's a comic book. I've bought cars for $45.
But dude, it's the creeper.
I looked around. Is that Uncle Black behind the counter?
Affirmative.
Uncle Black was white, really white, as if he hadn't been out from under the fluorescent lights in a long, long time. He was slim and maybe 5'5", in his early 40s, mousy brown hair that needed a cutting, dressed in vintage clothes from the 50s. I suspected the vintage look wasn't intentional.
Moonman, he said. What's up?
I brought the dudette, Mooner said. She's like cool. She's bus girl.
She doesn't look like bus girl. Bus girl has big hooters and golden clothes. She needs to come back when she looks like bus girl, and maybe Uncle Black will talk to her.
I gave Uncle Black my card. I need to talk to you about the protection you're paying. Uncle Black tore the card up and threw it into the air like confetti.
Uncle Black will not pay one more penny to protection, and Uncle Black will only talk to Bus Girl when she's appropriately dressed.
Bus Girl is a digital creation of her sick cousin, I said to Uncle Black. Uncle Black's eyes narrowed and his upper lip curled back.
Uncle Black hates digital. Digital is the work of the devil.
He bent below the counter and came up with a shotgun.
Get out of my store, you spawn of Satan!
Mooner and I scurried out of the store and ran halfway down the street before we remembered the Shelby sitting in front of Black's books. I was at the corner wondering if it was safe to sneak back and retrieve the car, and a black sedan slid to a stop and double-parked beside the Shelby. Two guys who looked like bad business got out of the car and walked into the comic book store. There was a shotgun blast, and the two guys ran out of the store. One of them stumbled and was scooped up and stuffed into the black sedan by the second guy. The second guy sighted what looked like a missile launcher on the roof of the Shelby, and phoomph, he fired something off into Black's. There was a small explosion inside the store, the black sedan laid down rubber and sped away, and then there was a large explosion.
Ba-room!
The front windows to Black's blew out, and bits and pieces of comic books floated in the air like giant dust motes. Fire licked out the open windows, and black smoke billowed into the street and was swept skyward. My initial reaction was shocked paralysis. I stood rooted to the spot, mouth open, eyes wide. When my heart resumed beating, I thought about the people who might be trapped inside. No hope for Uncle Black, but there were two floors above him. What's on the second and third floor? I asked Mooner.
Storage. I was up there once. It's like where comic books go to sleep.
People were gathering in the street, keeping a good distance from the fire. There was a third explosion, and flames shot out the door and ignited the Shelby. The car alarm went off, a fireball rose around the car, and the car exploded. Everyone backed up.
Dude,
Mooner said. I felt my cell phone buzz, and I looked at the screen. Ranger.
Your GPS just went blank, Ranger said when I answered.
The car exploded. There was a beat of silence.
Raphael won the pool, Ranger said. Are you okay?
Yes.
I'll send someone.
Two cop cars and a fire truck rolled down Stark. A second fire truck rumbled in. Firemen went to work, and Mooner and I stood for a few minutes watching the Shelby burn out. I'm guessing Uncle Black didn't make his protection payment on time, I said to Mooner.
Comic book people are fearless,
Mooner said. I saw two rangeman vehicles stop half a block away. They couldn't get closer. I waved, and we walked the distance. Hal was on the sidewalk waiting with the key to a gleaming new black Ford Escort.
I hope this is okay, he said. Ranger said to take one from the fleet.
This is perfect, thank you. Sorry you didn't win the pool. Hal grinned.
I was 12 hours off. I didn't think the Shelby would last this long.
He opened the door to the Escort for me.
You're not going to believe this, but I swear a rooster ran across the road right in front of us when we were coming down Stark.
I blew out a sigh. got into the escort, and drove to the Bonds bus. Lula was doing nail polish repair when I walked in. She was wearing a lemon-yellow spandex dress and 4-inch black platform heels, and her hair was a big puffball of neon green. "Is that your real hair?" I asked her.
"No way. This here's a wig. We had to do surgery on some of my hair since a chicken from hell got into it. Was that another new car you just drove up in? What happened to the Shelby?"
"Exploded."
"Shit happens," Lula said.
"That would lead me to believe it didn't go well with Uncle Black," Connie said. "Also exploded," I told her.
"It was a tragedy," Mooner said. "They blew up a creeper comic in primo condition, man. Someone should pay."
"People will be scared after this," Connie said. "No one's going to be talking on Stark Street."
"What's all down the front of you?" Lula asked me.
"Chocolate ice cream." Mooner lost his mellow over the creeper demise, so we stopped for ice cream to calm him down. I glanced at my shirt. I needed calming down, too. My phone buzzed, and my parents' number popped up. No way was I talking to my mother. She'd ferret the car explosion out of me, and she'd want to talk about Dave, and God help me if she found out about the chickens. I'd need more ice cream. "I'm going home," I said to Connie. "I need a new shirt." The good thing about always wrecking cars is that at least for a while no one knew what I was driving. I parked in my lot and thought chances were good I wouldn't find a dead body in the escort when I returned. I let myself into my apartment, went straight to the bedroom, flopped onto the bed, and covered my head with a pillow. I woke up to a phone ringing. "I've been calling and calling," my mother said. "Where were you that you couldn't answer?" "It was in my bag. I didn't hear it." "Well, thank goodness I finally got you. Everyone will be here in 15 minutes. "Everyone? The dinner party. I told you about it days ago. Emma and Herb Brewer and Dave. Emma said everyone was very excited to get the invitation." "Not everyone," I said. "I'm not excited. I'm horrified. I'm not interested in Dave, and I don't want to have dinner with his parents. I made chicken parmesan. I can't come. I have plans. I have to work." "I know when you're fibbing, Stephanie Plum. I went to all this trouble just for you, so you could spend some time with a nice man. A man who could give you a future, a family. The least you can do is make an effort. I even made pineapple upside-down cake." I was screwed. A major load of guilt plus pineapple upside-down cake. "And for goodness sakes," my mother said, "wear something nice. Please don't wear jeans and a t-shirt." I pulled the t-shirt over my head and looked around. Lots of dirty clothes, not many clean ones. The new red dress was hanging in the front of the closet. It was the easy choice. Grandma was waiting when I parked in the driveway behind my dad's car.
"Don't you look pretty," Grandma said. "I read somewhere that men like women who wear red. It's supposed to be one of them things that gets a man in a state."
From my experience, it didn't take much to get a man in a state.
"Dave might even propose when he sees you in this dress," Grandma said. "This dress is a man catcher."
I didn't want to catch any more men. I wanted to eat chicken parm and go home and put the pillow over my head again. I watched a silver Honda Accord roll down the street and park behind my car, and I was relieved to be one step closer to dinner. Dave was driving. It looked like his dad was sitting alongside him, and his mom was in the back. Dave got out, ran around the car, and retrieved a party platter from the back seat. All the blood drained from my head and pooled in my feet. I put a hand out to steady myself and forced myself to breathe. Put a rubber Frankenstein mask and a padded coverall on Dave, and you had Juki Beck's killer. It was an instant gut reaction. There was something about Dave's posture and the way he moved when he rounded the car that clicked in my brain. The next thing that clicked in my brain was disbelief. There was no way it could be Dave, right?
"Oh my gosh," Grandma said when she saw Dave. "What the heck happened to you?"
His eyes were less swollen, but they were still pretty ugly, black with tinges of green, and he still had the Band-Aid across his nose.
"I took an elbow to the nose in a football game," Dave said. "No big deal." "You always were an athlete," Grandma said, ushering everyone into the living room.
Emma and Herb Brewer were in their late 50s. They were pleasant-looking people, tastefully dressed, seemingly happy. Hard to believe they'd spawn a killer. Hard to believe Nudnik Dave would strangle someone.
What a lovely home, Emma said.
My father stood from his chair and nodded hello. He'd been coerced into abandoning his Tony Soprano collared knit shirt in favor of a button-down dress shirt. This signified a major social event. The button-down dress shirt was usually reserved for Christmas, Easter, and funerals. Dave handed me the party platter. Our eyes met for a long moment, and I had an irrational stab of fear that he knew I suspected him of murder. I placed the platter on the table and made an effort to pull myself together. There was no hard evidence that suggested Dave was the killer, I told myself. I usually had good intuition, but it was only intuition after all, and it wasn't infallible, and in this case, it felt ridiculous. The antipasto looks great, I said. Did you put the platter together?
We picked it up at Giovacchini's.
Dave moved close beside me, his breath soft against my ear.
That's a killer dress.
I felt my scalp prickle, and my heart skipped a beat. Killer? What do you mean by that?
Think about it, Dave said,
and he winked at me. My mother brought the chicken parmesan to the table, and I took my usual seat to my dad's left. Dave chose the seat next to me.
Dave came over and made the most wonderful meal for us the other night, Grandma said to Emma Brewer. He even made chocolate cake.
It's always been his way to relax, Emma said. When he was a little boy, he made up his own brownie recipe. The more stress he had, the more he needed to cook.
I wondered how much cooking it took to mitigate murdering 5 people. Grandma helped herself to spaghetti.
I'm surprised he don't do all the cooking for you.
Emma rolled her eyes.
He makes too much of a mess. There's dirty dishes everywhere.
That's a man for you, Grandma said. Always making a mess.
Not always, Dave said. Sometimes we know how to avoid making a mess. For instance, the bail bonds lot killer broke his victim's necks. No bloody mess.
That's terrible, Grandma said. I don't know how a person could do that.
Probably like working in a slaughterhouse, Dave said. After you kill the first 100 cows, it starts to feel like just another day on the job. Have you ever worked in a slaughterhouse? My father asked him. No, but I worked in a bank. There are similarities.
David, that is not funny, his mother said.
How do you know the killer is a man? Grandma asked Dave. It could be a woman.
Dave wrapped his hand around my neck.
You need some muscle to break a neck.
He applied pressure and rocked me slightly side to side.
I don't think a woman would have the strength. And from what I've read, Lou Dugan wasn't a lightweight like Stephanie.
The instant I got home, I was going to call Morelli, and then I was going to make sure my gun was loaded.
The hand, I said to Dave. Remove it.
He released my neck and reached for his wine glass.
Just making a point.
I jostled against him, and some of his wine slopped over onto his shirt.
Oh my gosh, I said. I'm so sorry.
Okay. It was childish, but he wasn't the only one who could make a point. Although looking at it in retrospect, it was probably not a good idea to piss off a guy I suspected of being a serial killer. I would have been more worried if he'd shot his victims. I didn't think he could strangle all of us at the dinner table. Still, my heart was tap dancing in my chest, and my stomach was producing acid at a record rate. Maybe I'd go from my parents' house directly to Morelli's. He bought Maalox by the gallon jug, and I could tell him about Dave. Everyone sat for a moment in open-mouthed horror, staring at the purple stains on Dave's shirt. His mother dug in her purse for a stain remover stick, and my mother ran to get the spray and wash. An hour and a half later, we waved goodbye to Emma, Herb, and Dave.
Except for when you spilled Dave's wine, that went pretty good, Grandma said.
My mother rolled her eyes. He tried to kiss Stephanie goodbye, and she kicked him. It was an accident, I said.
I don't like him, my father said.
My mother was hands on hips.
He's a nice young man. Why don't you like him?
I don't need a reason, my father said. I just don't like him. And I don't like this shirt either. I hate this shirt.
I hung my bag on my shoulder and left my parents' house.
Chapter 38. I drove the short distance to Morelli's house, parked behind his green SUV, and used my key to open his door. Morelli was on the couch watching a 2.5 Men rerun. He looked me up and down and smiled.
Is it Christmas morning?
Not nearly, I said. I have raging heartburn. I stop for whatever it is you're currently using. He pointed to a large bottle of Tums on the coffee table.
My reflex was doing great until someone started gifting you murder victims.
I reached for the Tums. You want to have more reason for reflux? I just had dinner with Dave.
Again? In that dress?
The dress is a whole long, complicated story that has nothing to do with Dave, except that he told me it was a killer dress.
It is, Morelli said. It's a killer dress.
He said it like it had special meaning, and he winked at me.
Any man in his right mind would wink at you in this dress.
He said, think about it.
I have the feeling I'm missing an important ingredient in this conversation.
I told him how I watched the video and thought I recognized the killer, and how tonight I had the revelation that it was Dave when I saw him run around the car, and then Dave pretended to choke me at the dinner table.
Interesting and creepy, but not exactly damning evidence, Morelli said. And we need to take into consideration that the man is willing to teach you to cook.
You're not taking this seriously.
I'm taking it very seriously. I've gone through half a jug of Tums since Gordon Kulicki turned up dead. It's just that Dave seems an unlikely killer. What's his motive?
Finding out his motive is on your side of the division of labor. I already did my part. I recognized him in the video. Morelli nodded.
Recognizing him in the video is good. What was it you saw? A tattoo? A scar? Did you recognize his shoes?
It was just a feeling. It was the way he moved.
This is like going out in the field with a clairvoyant.
Does that ever work?
Sometimes, Morelli said. How comfortable do you feel with this? On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being a positive identification, how would you rate this?
If I was rating gut instinct, it would be a 9. When I temper that with rational thought, it goes way down, maybe to a 5 or 6.
5 or 6 is still pretty strong.
I would much rather Nick Alpha turned out to be the killer.
I'm not going to discount Alpha, but it wouldn't hurt to dig around in Dave's life.
How do we begin?
There's no we. This is a police investigation.
I didn't come over here to talk to a cop. I came here to talk to... I stopped, because I didn't know what to call Morelli.
Friend sounded lame. Boyfriend was too high school. We weren't engaged, married, or living together.
I don't even know what to call you, I said, hands in the air. What kind of a relationship is this?
It's a relationship that sucks. Who had the brilliant idea we should be free to date?
You did.
I don't think so, Morelli said.
I distinctly remember you said we needed to explore other possibilities. Morelli reached for the Tums. He shook out 2 for himself and 2 for me. How'd it go in South Jersey? I asked him.
We found the 5th car. We also found a 6th that had been torched. It looks like there might be the remains of 2 bodies in the torched car.
More poker players?
No one else is missing. The guys who only played occasionally are all accounted for.
Maybe it's an unrelated car.
Hard to believe. It was found in the same area.
I held my hand out. Give me 2 more Tums for the road. I have to go home.
You don't have to go home.
I'm getting a headache. I need to go home and put a pillow over my face.
Will that help?
It worked this afternoon. He gave me the bottle of Tums.
Take the whole bottle. I've got more. You know where to find me when the headache goes away.
It was dark when I reached the lot to my apartment building. I rode around looking for Regina's car, Dave's parents' car, and Nick Alpha's car. I didn't see any of them, so I parked and crossed to the back door. I was talking to myself again, getting into the elevator. This is getting old, I said. I'm tired of looking for people who want to kill me. It's exhausting. And what am I supposed to do with Morelli, and my missing sex drive, and my job that's not bringing in any money? I popped a couple more Tums, rode to the 2nd floor, and unlocked my door. I stepped in, closed and locked the door, and realized Dave was in my kitchen.
Surprise, he said.
I turned to leave, and he put himself between me and the door. I stepped away from him and narrowed my eyes. Get out!
I just got here.
How did you get in?
I took a key out of the drawer last time I was here cooking.
I walked into the kitchen and took the lid off the cookie jar. No gun.
I have the gun, he said. Not that I need it.
I threw the lid at him, and he ducked away. I grabbed the cookie jar and whacked him on the side of his head. He staggered back and pulled himself together.
You should stop hitting me, he said, snatching the cookie jar out of my hand, throwing it across the room. What did I ever do to you?
For starters, you broke into my apartment.
I didn't break in. I walked in. I have a key, like Morelli.
I gave Morelli a key, and you stole yours.
That's not all I'm stealing. I'm stealing you.
Excuse me?
Just like Morelli stole my girl back in high school. I took her to the prom, and Morelli took her to bed. She was wearing my class ring and my corsage. She was my date, and he seduced her in the school parking lot.
He seduced every girl in the school in the parking lot, and one in a bakery. You can't take it personally.
The hell I can't. I've got his girl now, and I'm gonna even the score.
I don't think so.
Dead or alive, Dave said. Your choice.
Okay, that was scary. I was doing pretty good up to that point, but that took my breath away. You killed Lou Dugan, didn't you?
He grinned. I've been waiting for you to figure it out. I ran around the car just for you tonight. I knew you'd watch the tape from the crime scene. Pretty cool, right? And the bodies I addressed to you. Did that freak Morelli out?
Yeah. He gave a bark of laughter.
I've had really crapola luck lately. My life hasn't been a lot of fun. Lost my house, my dog, my car, and my job. Lost my wife, but good riddance to that one. Went to jail for a while. Not a good experience. And to add insult to injury, I had to move in with my parents. So I'm feeling pretty down. I'm working at a shit job. Had to kill my cousin to get it. Plus, I'm busting ass killing all those fucking poker players. And one day, like a gift from God, my mother presents me with you. She meets your mother in the checkout line at the market, and it's ordained from that moment on that you're mine. And life is fun again.
Has it occurred to you that you might be crazy?
I don't feel crazy.
You killed 5 people.
Actually, it was 7. No, wait, there were 2 in Georgia. 9.
Doesn't that bother you?
No, it was easy. I guess I just have a talent for killing people. I'm good at it. I snap their necks. No blood. Okay, sometimes they spit up a little, but it's not like getting shot.
I'd face down my share of crazy killers, but never someone this cold. I did my best to keep it together. I didn't think Dave was the sort of guy who would respond well to drama.
Ick! The hard part is getting rid of them. I buried the 2 in Georgia in a cornfield. No one's found them. I drove my cousin and her boyfriend down to the Pine Barrens and set the car on fire. I was worried about DNA, but honestly, I don't think DNA is all it's cracked up to be.
You did it to get a job?
Yeah. Smart, right? Not only did I get her job, but she'd lifted money from the company safe, and I got the money, too.
And Lou Dugan?
I was sort of in business with Dugan. I went to school with his son, and I was over to his house a lot when I was a kid. When I moved to Georgia, I stayed in touch with Lou. He was a sharp businessman. I learned a lot from him. I was making foreclosures at the bank, and Lou saw a way to make money on them. I'd foreclose on some loser's house, and Dugan would buy it for way under market value through one of his holding companies. And then we figured out how we could get creative, and by manipulating some paperwork, we could snatch houses right up from under people. Problem was, we yanked a mortgage from some whiner who didn't just roll over when he lost his house.
That's when you went to jail?
I was only in jail until my bail bond was set. I got out and started cleaning house. I got rid of the 2 men under me who knew what was going on. They could have testified, and I would have been sent away for a long, long time.
The cornfield?
Yeah. And then Lou got nervous. I got my kickback from him in cash, but he was sitting there with all these hot properties in his holding companies.
Do you still have the money?
The lawyers have the money. Trial lawyers and divorce lawyers. I should have been a lawyer. The only money I have came from the stash my cousin stole.
So you killed Lou because he was nervous?
He transferred a lot of money into a Buenos Aires bank, and he was getting ready to disappear. Asked me to drive him to the airport. He was taking a red eye. I had a feeling he was going to kill me. so I killed him first.
Just like that?
Yep. Came up behind him, choked him, and broke his neck. And then I had the same stupid body problem. I was driving him around in his car, thinking it was like that movie, Weekend at Bernie's. And I drive down Hamilton Avenue and see the backhoe sitting out in the bonds office lot. It's 3 a.m, no traffic, as dark as a witch's heart. And there's a backhoe waiting to dig a grave. My mistake was that I didn't dig it deep enough. I buried Lucarelli deeper, but they found him anyway. Then I decided to have some fun with Juki and Kulicki. I knew the security people installed video. What did you think of the Frankenstein mask? Good touch, right?
I understand why you killed Dugan. I don't get the other murders.
I had to clean house. Lucarelli was the lawyer who processed all the paper, and Kulicki moved a lot of the transactions through his bank. Sam Gripp worked for Dugan and knew everything. Gripp knew when Dugan passed gas. Juki was sleeping with Gripp, and she knew everything he knew. The whole thing is just so fucking complicated. Who would have thought? It's like a sweater that starts to unravel. I mean, I can't kill people fast enough.
So, it didn't have anything to do with the poker game?
What poker game?
They all played poker together, except for Juki.
I didn't know that, Dave said.
This is why we didn't connect the dots to Dave, I thought. We were in the right neighborhood, but we were on the wrong road. What about the cars? I asked him.
When I kill someone, I like to leave my car out of it to cut back on the DNA potential. After I burned Francie's car, I realized burning a car produces a lot of smoke that could attract attention, so I stopped burning cars. And after I drove the car into the woods and burned it, I had no way to get home. So I started using one of Harry's moving vans to drive the car to the car graveyard. I'd just drive the victim's car in, close the van doors, and drive the car out when I got to the Barrens. The more you know, the more impressed you are, right? Morelli's no match for me. I've been making him look like an idiot.
Why did you leave Sam Gripp in the trunk?
I was in a rush. I killed him in the afternoon, and I was making pot roast for dinner.
I popped 2 more Tums. I'd been saving the big question for last. So, are you done killing now?
That depends on you, Dave said.
He took a white envelope from his jacket pocket. For Stephanie was written on the outside of the envelope.
This will get us to Thailand. The plane leaves at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. We can stay at an airport hotel tonight, have some fun. I'll snap a couple intimate pictures of you for Morelli, and we'll start a new life together. Or I can kill you now, have some fun with you after you're dead, and go to Thailand by myself.
That's gross, Dave shrugged.
Life is gross.
He'd been calm through all this, showing some animation when he talked about the killings, showing some checked anger when he mentioned Morelli. I'd been working hard to contain my fear and revulsion, and I think I was successful. My plan was to do whatever I could to buy time and look for an opportunity to make an escape. I suspected he had only one ticket to Thailand. He'd kill me on the road or at the airport hotel. He knew it was only a matter of time before forensics discovered it was Francie in the trashed car. And Francie was the clue to his undoing. So Dave was anxious to get out of town. He wanted to complete his revenge on Morelli, but he was feeling pressured. I've never seen Thailand, I said, taking the envelope.
Smart girl.
Let me throw some things in a suitcase and I'll be ready to go.
Not necessary. I have a bag already packed for you. The rest you can buy when we land.
I need my makeup.
You need nothing. Get your purse. And just so you know, I'm capable of shooting you if it becomes necessary.
He wrapped his hand around my neck and moved me to the door.
Behave yourself, he said, guiding me out the door and down the hall to the elevator.
His hand never left my neck, and I could feel his fingers gripping hard. The elevator doors opened, and he walked me through the empty lobby.
We'll take my car, he said, 3rd row toward the back of the lot.
Does your mother know you're going to Thailand?
No. No one knows.
He pushed me forward out the lobby door onto the short sidewalk that led to the parking area. Why Thailand? I asked him.
Why not?
We were halfway across the lot when a stocky guy stepped from behind a parked car. He came into the light, and I saw it was Nick Alpha.
I don't know who you are, he said to Dave, but you need to step away. I have business with Ms. Plum.
Your business will have to wait, Dave said.
Alpha drew a gun.
My business won't wait.
Dave took my gun out of his pocket and aimed it at Alpha.
I don't give a crap about your business. I got here first.
I could feel Dave's fingers tighten around my neck. I could barely breathe. I had two guys fighting over who was going to kill me. Could my life possibly get any worse?
Put the gun down, Alpha said.
Dave narrowed his eyes.
You put your gun down.
I heard a car engine catch from the back of the lot, and I caught a glimpse of the black Lexus as it crept forward out of its parking space. And here comes the rhinoceros, I thought. Now three people were trying to kill me. This had to be some sort of record. The tires on the Lexus chirped when the accelerator went down to the floorboard and the car jumped into motion. Dave turned toward the sound, loosening his grip enough for me to jump clear. A fraction of a second later, there was a round of gunfire and the sickening thud of a car slamming into a body. The Lexus careened around a row of cars and roared away. I peeked out from behind Mr. Molnar's Chrysler and saw both men lying motionless on the pavement. I suppose I should have gone to see if I could help them, but I didn't. I ran back to the building, up the stairs and down the hall as fast as I could in my red spike heels. I was shaking so bad I had double vision, and I had to two-hand the key to get it into the lock to open my door. I rushed inside, flipped the deadbolts, and bent at the waist to breathe. I was gasping for air and sobbing, and I dialed two wrong numbers before I was able to tap in 911. I reported the gunfire and car massacre, disconnected, and called Morelli and Ranger. Sirens wailed in the distance, and red and blue strobe lights flashed against my window as cop cars and EMTs swept into my lot. I went to the window and looked down. It was dark and difficult to see, but I could make out the two bodies on the pavement. When I saw Morelli's SUV and Ranger's Porsche pull into the lot, I took the stairs to the lobby.
Chapter 39. It was a glorious morning. The sun was shining, the air quality was in the breathable range, and I was alive. The emergency vehicles, cops, reporters, coroners, and gawkers were gone from my parking lot. The pimple had disappeared from my forehead, and the Vordo was back with a vengeance. I felt like Julie Andrews in The Sound of Music. I wanted to throw my head back and sing and twirl around with my arms stretched wide. Alpha had shot and killed Dave, and Regina was in jail, charged with vehicular homicide in the death of Alpha. Offhand, I couldn't think of anyone who was alive and free and wanted to kill me. I'd showered, done the whole blow-dry thing with my hair, and gotten dressed in my favorite t-shirt and jeans. My cupboards were bare, and I was ravishingly hungry, so I drove to my parents' house where there would be eggs, bacon, coffee, juice, and Danish pastries. I parked at the curb and saw Grandma come to the door before I reached the porch.
"He seemed like such a nice young man," Grandma said, opening the door to me. "We heard first thing this morning, and we couldn't believe it. Your mother went straight to the ironing basket."
I followed Grandma to the kitchen, said hello to my mom, and poured myself a cup of coffee.
"Are you hungry?" Grandma asked me. "Do you need breakfast?"
"I'm famished." Grandma pulled eggs and bacon out of the refrigerator.
"We got coffee cake on the table, and I'll get an omelet started for you."
My mother's eyes were glazed, her face registering complete disbelief, her arm mechanically moving the iron over the sleeve of my father's dress shirt. "He seemed like such a nice young man," she said. "I was sure he was the one. He came from such a good family."
"Captain of the football team," Grandma said, laying the bacon out in the big fry pan. Bang, bang, bang on the front door.
"Yoo-hoo!"
It was Lula.
"I was on my way to your apartment and you drove right past," Lula said to me. "So I hooked a U-turn. When it turned out you didn't go to the office, I figured you were headed here."
She looked over at the kitchen table.
"Coffee cake." "Help yourself," Grandma said. "We got bacon and eggs coming up."
Lula sat at the table and cut a piece of cake.
"I heard all about last night. It was on the morning news, and I have to tell you, it was a shocker. Dave seemed like such a nice guy. Who would have thought a demented killer could make pork chops like that? And now he's dead, and there's no more pork chops."
"It's a crying shame," Grandma said.
Fucking A, Lula said.
Oops, excuse my language, but the news was real upsetting.
I sat opposite Lula at the little table and sipped my coffee.
You don't look too disturbed, Lula said to me. I would have thought you'd have an eye twitch or something.
Nope. I woke up feeling terrific.
Huh, Lula said. Now that I'm paying attention, you got a glow to you. I bet you got some last night.
Nope again. I just feel relieved.
It had to be scary when you were with Dave, Lula said.
I nodded. He threatened to kill me if I didn't go to Thailand with him.
I saw a show on the Travel Channel about Thailand, Grandma said. It's a vacation destination.
Lula cut herself another piece of cake.
It's supposed to be real nice there. I wouldn't mind going to Thailand. Of course, I wouldn't go with a man who gave me an ultimatum like that. That baloney don't work with me.
My mother sighed and shook her head. He was so polite, and he had such good table manners. He killed at least 7 people in Trenton, I said. God knows how many he killed in Atlanta.
It's just as well you didn't get to fly, Lula said. You would have had to go through one of them body scanners and show some stranger your business.
We all did an involuntary shiver at the thought.
Maybe Dave was going to take you on a private jet, Grandma said. Richard Gere did that for Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman.
Dave had given me an envelope that presumably held the plane tickets. I'd stuffed the envelope into my bag and not given it another thought. I think I've still got the tickets, I said, digging through the jumble of junk in my bag. I found the envelope and spilled the contents onto the table. There was a one-way ticket to Thailand with Dave's name on it, and 8 American Airlines gift cards addressed to me. They were worth $1,500 apiece. Dave had been leaving his options open.
Girl, you could use those gift cards, Lula said. You could go on a vacation with the man of your dreams, if only you knew who that was.
I looked at the gift cards. I know exactly what I'm going to do with them, I told Lula. And I know who I'm taking with me. Lula leaned forward, hands flat to the table.
Are you telling me your brain and your lady parts decided on a Love Fest bake-off winner?
I'm saying I know who's doing the body scan with me, and it has nothing to do with my brain. This vacation is going to be all about lady parts. This is Lorelei King. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Smokin' 17 by Janet Ivanovich. This program was produced by Dan Musselman. Text copyright 2011 by Ivanovich Inc. Production copyright 2011, Random House Inc. All rights reserved.